We're going to call this meeting to order, please. I know other people will be coming in. It's 9:22. We have look at your list, and you can see what we have up on the board behind us, and then over there, Soil and Water, Finance, County Attorney, Emergency Response, Highway and Facilities. And we want to start out the meeting with the County Administrator. Has a few words to say about some budget items.
Well, I was going to go through kind of an example here, Jim, because these forms can be kind of hard to read. I'm looking around, though, and some of the newer members of the legislature aren't here yet. I'm wondering if
we can pick it up when they get here.
Yeah.
You know,
would that make sense?
More sense.
Okay. Then let's do that.
Okay. Let's move right to Soil and Water Conservation.
That's Craig.
You guys are good. Yeah. You need one more chair, right?
That's it. There's a budget book if they start asking questions.
Okay.
All right.
Good evening.
We have another chair coming for your partner here.
Oh, okay.
Craig, I hope we get those for you.
Did he already announce replacement pages?
I'm Craig Scott. I'm the district manager for the Soil and Water Conservation District, and this is Ron Updike, our board of directors chairman. So he came along tonight. So here we are again, budget time. All right, so our total expenditures, you know, those numbers are fluid because we do so much grant work. It's a best guess. I'm thinking that in 2011 we probably will expend more grant money because we have some grants that are coming to an end. They have to be done, and especially ag grants, the farmers are kind of anxious to get going on those, and so that's where we are. Our target for 2010 was $138,944. That included the rent payment for the building that you moved us to up on 1771 Hanshaw Road. So our actual operating budget funds were $105,938. Originally, the county legislature had put in the grant, the rent funding through 2011. This reduction is based on the entire $138,000. So if that follows through, our operating budget will drop to just a little over $96,000, and that will translate into a little bit more than 9% of our actual operating budget from the county appropriation. So in interest of that, I did request an OTR, an over target, for the exact amount that is the recommendation for the reduction, the 95.87. So it's basically maintenance of effort, you know, technical assistance for all the different programs, projects we do, just so we can keep doing the same things. Wanted to show you some of the leverage funds, the Agnon Point Source Pollution Abatement Control Program. In just 2009 and 2010 alone, we have received $1.65 million in state funds with total project costs of over $2 million. Just recently, I was informed by the State Soil and Water Conservation Committee that they did a evaluation of the program and review of the program, and I was told that Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District is ranks number one for receiving funds in the state, about $5.4 million since the beginning of the program. And it's also important to understand that no other department or agency is eligible to receive any of those AgNon point funds. Those go, the soil and water districts in the state are the only eligible applicant. We also continue to do a lot of New York State DEC water quality improvement grants, stream restorations, stormwater. Right now we have a stream restoration program, a project out in Caroline that is just winding down, probably be done this week. It protects the erosion on the stream bank through the hamlet of Slaterville, but it also protects the aquifer there that was very much in danger of being compromised. And all the people in Slaterville and around there, most of them use that aquifer for their drinking water. In total, that project alone is probably going to come in at about $450,000. Town of Caroline had money to put into it, and we had money to put into it from state grants. We have other grants in the hopper that we're still waiting on for DEC. They don't seem to be able to run their grant program quite as efficiently as Ag and Markets for whatever reason. But we do have several grants in the hopper. I've been told those have been, they've been ranked, they've been evaluated, and I've been told by a couple different sources that we did very well. If they ever get around to get those out, I'm sure they will eventually. And of course, we continue to get the FLOPA funds. That's about $85,000 per year that comes to the county. So I think it's important to understand the leveraging that all this money coming into Tompkins County does. I mean, we have local contractors and engineers doing work. Local businesses are selling supplies and materials for those jobs because all these projects are implementation on the ground type projects. And then those local businesses and their employees, they spend the money in the local economy and recycle it back. So I think the county gets quite a bang for its buck here. I know some of you have seen this before, but couldn't help myself. Had to show some of the neighboring counties, all of our neighboring counties, what their county appropriations are. Chemung County, $150,000. I know they don't pay any rent. They're in a county building. The county takes care of that. Cortland was $300,000. They still don't know what they're looking at for this next year, but they were $300,000 for 2010. Cayuga County was $450,000, and they expect level funding for 2011. They actually own the building and actually lease the building out to other agencies. Schuyler County received a 20% increase in 2010 over 2009, and they were moved into a county building. They pay no rent. The county takes care of most of everything. Seneca, over $300,000. Tioga, almost $190,000. They expect to stay level.
Sorry.
What happened here?
That compares to what for Thompson?
105, well, 138 if you count the rent and everything. Tioga doesn't pay any rent. They actually are in a county building. These counties' operating budgets, and ours is a little over 100, was 105 in 2010. So I'm just making the pitch that, we do have very qualified and specialized staff. Takes them to implement. They have special certifications. They have special skills that really nobody else in the county can cover. For instance, the stormwater certifications. We do stormwater trainings that all contractors nowadays have to have. We can do those. Our stream person has had a lot of extensive training, so he can go out and implement these really nice stream projects. You know, it's all, they are all very well qualified and very well trained people that I have on staff right now. The staff has not received a raise in the past 2 years. You know, our health care costs, we're self-insured. They're going up at least another 12% this year from all the information I'm getting. You know, but I know everybody's facing those kinds of problems too. So the bottom line is we're not asking for an increase, but we are asking for level funding from 2010. Just something on the ag part, Ag Nonpoint program. You know, a lot of people are concerned that the EPF isn't paying their bills, and in some instances they're not. But yesterday I received an electronic payment from Ag and Markets for ag grants of over $642,000 in our bank account, grant funds. So there is some good things going on out there. The ag part seems to be doing better than the other parts as far as paying and keeping us up to date. So that's it. Any questions?
I have one. Your health care costs have gone up. Are you not? You're not part of the county health care?
No, we're self-insured.
How can you be self-insured? A small organization.
That's why our costs are so high.
can Joe?
Just to keep on this. Does that mean you buy an insurance policy, mm-hmm. or you pay the claims as they come in?
No, we buy an insurance policy.
So it's an insured product that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. We're with Excellus,
okay.
Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's good policy. It really is, but it's expensive.
They could not come into the consortium.
We can't come into the consortium. We asked that question, and when Greg Stevenson was here, he actually looked into it, and there was some language that precluded us from being in there.
They're not a municipality.
They're a school corporation.
Put your hands down again, and then Dooley, I thought, was number one. Did you have your hand up, Dooley?
I did.
Okay, so then we'll just go around the room from Dooley to Peter to... All right?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
These are just some general questions. The total staffing, how many people are in your office?
We've had six permanent, and that's something I should say, too. Our secretary treasurer, as probably most of you know, passed away this summer. We're advertising that position as a three-quarter position. We're going to try it without having a full-time staff person there to cut down some costs. And also, we just recently lost another staff person. And we're looking at the possibility of not filling that, at least right now, and the other staff picking up some of the work. I mean, they're working on coming up themselves with a plan of how they think they can cover that work. It's going to be a lot because there's a lot of time connected and pay with that.
So my question is, what is your staffing, what was it for 2010, and what do you anticipate it for 2011?
Well, it's been six in 2010, and it may be only five, or five and three quarters, I guess, would end up.
Why don't you say something about the group concern about saving some money?
Frank, I can't hear a word you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of my question.
You want to ask that question when we get to you? Peter, you were next.
I haven't finished.
Oh, all right.
Your total budget with all the grants and so forth, how much money do you...
We usually run about $1 million budget every year. I mean, it varies, like I said, depending on when the grant money comes in and when those projects get done, but it's been pretty consistent the last few years, just above or just below.
And you introduced Ron Updike. How big is your board of directors and who are they?
Our board of directors is five. Frank and Pam are both on. Ron is our chair. Mm-hmm. Dan Carey, who's a farmer in Groton, mm-hmm. represents the Farm Bureau. And Alan Teeter, who's a farmer but also a code enforcement officer in Enfield, represents the Grange.
Okay, thank you. Reading the text in the budget book is, it's a very impressive amount of work you get done. Thank you.
Peter was next, and we're just going to head around this way.
I think there's a question for Joe that I don't quite understand. This is an agency, right?
Yes, sir.
And you, in your budgeting, treated agencies the same way as you treated departments in terms of the cut level.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's right.
But I realize that there's a problem there because our departments don't pay rent and the agencies do. And so the effect of that is that we take a bigger cut out of the agencies. I'm repeating really what he said, but in the end, what it means is we're taking a bigger cut from the agencies than we are from the departments. Is that argument correct?
I'm not sure. The departments generally don't pay rent. That's correct. However, the departments have expenses. I don't know, Craig, if are your employees members of the state pension fund?
Yes.
They are. Okay. Well, there may be other costs. I was thinking maybe they weren't. There may be other cost pressures that affect our departments. But rent, again, is we carry that in the facilities budget.
So that's
a big difference.
That's two percentage points for these people, right?
Could be.
Let me clarify. They're more than just an agency. They're in the county law, and legally, they are what they classified as a component unit of the county. The soil and water's financial statements are added to our financial statements and blended in as part of the reporting entity, county speak. So they are recognized as a county unit in the county law. That's why, and part of the reason is because the legislature appoints the majority of the board and provides a significant amount, well, actually not a significant amount of the money, but because they appoint, the thought is that we control the operations from the standpoint of the board. But you did not have rental charges until just recently, is that correct?
We because had some minor ones, some when we were down with the NRCS.
Yeah.
But when it looked as though those were going to increase exponentially, that's when the county legislature decided that it was a better deal to move up where we are now as far as the rent goes.
If I could ask, and this is just refreshing my recollection, did the county increase its allocation to you when you became a tenant and had to pay rent? Was it
last year it showed on our budget, but the rent was a separate line item. This year it was just all lumped together.
But there was an increased allocation when you went from no rent to rent.
Yeah, the rent. Right. Yeah, the rent was added. Yeah.
I had Martha. Mike, go ahead.
Craig, if the over-target isn't funded to $10,000, basically, where do you go? What does it do?
If that stays?
No. If the cut stays?
Oh, that's what I mean. That's some of the concerns the staff has, is trying to find a way to soak up, so to speak, the duties from that other position. We're still investigating that, how that can work and if it can work, but that's one of our options. And
so it's a reduction in staff,
yeah,
basically, or positions.
Yeah, and actually we've already determined that the Secretary Treasurer is going to be a three-quarter time staff instead of a full time.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha?
Have you ever read The Worst Hard Time, a novel about the Dust Bowl? You should.
I've seen parts of it, yeah.
It has an incredibly compelling story about the origins of the soil districts,
yep,
which then became the soil and water districts.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm a little confused about the budget. It looks like the rent is covered in here. I'm looking at page 248 in the base budget book. And what's cutting, what's being cut is that sort of program expense line. So, and that line is going from, that's where the 9587 is cut. But the rent is covered, and the rent, that actually goes up. So a question to Joe and a question to you, Craig. Joe, why did you decide not to fund the OTR?
Well, I forgot the black hat that Jim Dennis bought me the other day. It was basically a black hat issue. This is consistent. I mean, what you will find in most of the agencies that we deal with were affected by the 6.9% cut, and in most cases, I won't say all, most cases, I've kept it at that level to reflect the shared sacrifice that you see throughout the budget.
Okay. And Craig, I'm sorry, where was, oh, is there really, in all of these grants, there's really no overhead, no administration kind of accounted for in
there's some, but it all has to be accounted for on hours. I mean, we have to show that we have the hours to put into those, you know, so we have to match those hours. So we have to be real careful the amounts of administrative overhead that we put in there.
Okay, because I mean, on a $1 million budget, a cut of less than $10,000 doesn't seem that big. I am, and then you said right now have six FTEs. Is that then plus the position that hasn't been filled because the person left?
No, we're at five right now.
You're at five.
Mm-hmm. And we're in the process of hiring a 3/4 time secretary treasurer.
Okay. So you had been at six.
Yeah, we were, and also I should clarify that too, because one of the positions we have right now is half time ag coordinator for the Upper Susquehanna Coalition, which will go over the next several months to full time. So half of that salary is being covered by the Upper Susquehanna Coalition. So that really was a new position, but the opportunity was there to hire this person, and knowing that over time he will go full time, but still be in our office. So we'll get a little bit of money back for hosting him in our office. So that's why we're actually at five right now. Otherwise, we'd be at four, because we added that new position just a couple of months ago.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Go ahead, Brian.
Just a little math question. By taking that sixth position down to 0.75, how does that compare to the 9,500 in
It's more than the 9,500. I mean, they'll say, well, no, not really, because it's probably a savings of about a little less than that, yeah, the savings will be.
Okay, so it sounds like you're willing to try that,
right,
to see if it works. It may actually be a wash in the end if it does work.
Right,
okay.
on that okay. situation. Yeah.
Thanks.
Will, did you have your hand up?
I did. Are you liking the new facility?
We like it very much up there. It's great. And our clientele, people that come, like it.
They like it as well.
They find it very easy to find, and they all say this is so nice.
Good.
Easy place to go to. And
trying to get my brain around your legal status. I was sounds like it's sort of in a funny world.
We are.
It common sense that we can't roll you into our health insurance. Are we absolutely sure that cannot be done?
That was the information Greg Stevenson came back with.
We can double check. They need to be a municipal corporation. That's really the threshold definition.
Okay.
So we can check that again. Mm-hmm. But I know it was looked at a year or so ago.
Yeah.
And
right.
it was no, but let's take another look.
And last question. You made comparisons to the expenditures of other counties,
mm-hmm.
and we are far less. Why is that? Is it any? Are you just a whole lot more efficient than those folks up in Hewlett County?
I don't know why that is. I mean, I'm sure it makes their budgeting easier, because there's times when we have to take a little money from here and a little from here. It's going to be tough when it comes time to pay the retirement system this year. That's going to be a big bill. And we usually have to pick a little bit from, you know, out of this grant, a little bit out of this one, and try to come up with it. That's going to be problematic when it comes time to pay that.
Okay, thank you.
To be honest.
May I inject?
Sure.
He says we can pick a little from this grant and a little from that grant. These grant numbers are very large, but there is very little money in there under the personnel line. Used to be none, and just in the last couple of years, they have offered a few thousand dollars for personnel, which has helped out immensely.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand the relationship between what the different numbers are in the total expenditure, slide two there, slide three that's actually in our budget, and the later number, the leveraged funds. So you're showing for 2011, for example, a target and a one-time figure that isn't in our main budget. And so I don't know if this is a question for you.
You're talking about the total expenditures or of the county?
Yeah, the sheet that's the total expenditures without the county share, or I assume it rolls in the county share.
Yeah, the county share is.
So where that number is your total budget that we don't necessarily impact?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's in there. I mean, I try to figure that in, how much we're going to get from the county.
And so is our $129,357 that's in the budget, in our budget book, part of that $1,045,000?
Yeah. I mean, it should be, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
which doesn't
like
matter.
I say, those figures are fluid every year. It's really tough. Budgeting, knowing how much we're actually going to expend in one year is a tough situation, just because of we're so dependent on grants.
Right. So maybe I'm not understanding what that first chart is for any of these departments that are coming to us. Because there's the total expenditures, and if David's...
You may see a different picture presented by the agencies as compared to the departments. When you look at this slide for the departments, you will find what you'll see in the budget. So it's their total expenditures less the revenues to apply against those expenditures. So the total expenditure page you'll see in the budget. The next slide down, the county share, is what you will also see on the department's page after they apply revenues. So that's the county share. So you'll see a nice symmetry on these slides in the case of county departments. In agencies, what I think Craig is showing you and what others may show you is what their total budget is that we don't show in our budget. All we show is our contribution to soil and water in our budget. So all you see in there is local share. So Craig, I believe that your slide, total expenditures, bundles up all of your sources of revenue.
Right.
And shows your entire budget,
right,
which we don't see in our document.
Exactly.
All that we see, Carol, is the next slide down, which is that local share. And those numbers should, in fact, do match up with what you see on page 248 of our budget.
Okay. So then I have two other questions.
Well, I think maybe I can clarify that, too. The target, those, I tried to come up with the figures that, you know, salaries and what other fixed costs we're going to have. And the one time are more the grant funding. On that slide. So.
Okay. Are you doing yourselves justice then? Because your leveraged funds and your grants later on in your slides talk about $1.65 million and $2.2 and even $5.4. So I'm not sure you're...
Yeah, well, it's because the cycles of the grants, we might have a grant for two to three years before all the funds get spent. So The 5.4 is the total ag grants that we've received over the course of the time of the program so far.
Okay. And then back to the question of the total expenditures. If I understand David correctly, somehow the county is responsible for the whole budget. Well, so if we're responsible for that $1 million,
we reported all it.
Yeah,
the county, should we be having it?
The county takes their financials and adds them to our financials to get an entity-wide picture, because the under the accounting standards, they are considered a component unit of the county. The Tompkins County Public Library is a component unit. The Tompkins County IDA is a component unit, and the Tompkins Tobacco Asset Securitization Corporation is also a component unit. All those things in our financial statements are thrown in to show, for some interested parties, a comprehensive picture.
So when the state is $1 to $2 million behind in reimbursing soil and water, the things we've already spent, does that then affect our, the county's general cash flow?
No.
No, only our cash flow.
Not yet, at least.
So we don't, okay.
Yeah, the county doesn't make up any of that or anything. It all because all the money from the state comes right directly through us. It doesn't come through the county. It comes right into our agency.
Yeah, I'm still finding, you don't have to answer it now, but yeah. I'm still finding it confusing why it's how we're responsible, but we don't need to have it in our budget. But that's not crazy.
You're responsible in oversight, stewardship.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. Kathy, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. Frank.
Gerald, if you bear in mind that slide that had all the counties on it, the point that I think that the soil water was trying to make is that for the county's approximately 130,000 contribution, compared to the county contributions of those other counties, we're getting back millions and millions of dollars that flow through the county as leveraged funds. So I have two questions. One is about the rent. My recollection was that the rent was wasn't it a three-year deal that we made? Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm not remembering this right, but I thought we made a commitment to fund the rent at the full shot for the payment was for 3 years.
That was my understanding.
So why is it that that's taken a hit? Why wasn't that part of the preserved as a whole number?
Well, that was my understanding.
Yeah, I don't.
That's what the text says.
Yeah, I don't have that agreement. So I don't know. This was viewed like every other agency, mm-hmm. with just a simple 6.9% cut in our contribution to the agency. So again, Frank, I don't know if that agreement said that we were going to cover any increases in rent over time. If it does, that's something that we'll have to take into account.
Yeah, okay. Because, I did see a copy of the agreement, I believe, and I do think the increases were spelled out on that original agreement, I believe.
The increases were. I don't know that the county made the obligation to cover those increases. But again, if that was the deal, then that's something that we're going to look at.
That's worth a look. In other words,
you have it.
The other one. Do you think the fact that the one position that not the secretary treasurer, the other position that perhaps is going to be spread out, it's being looked at to be spread out among the other employees. Do you think that'll be a successful deal?
I still have some reservations because of there's actually two contracts with specified funding connected to that position, and it's an hourly rate, and I want to see what the staff comes up with. because they know what the hours are.
Okay.
And see if they think they can fulfill those obligations.
Okay, and last one. This our board designated soil and water under the using the template from the Susquehanna Coalition. Soil and water is supposed to provide information on the oil drilling, on the gas drilling, excuse me. Can you say something about how that time will be covered if it happens?
If or when that comes, that is going to be a big time commitment. And, yeah, that's something, if when that happens, we're really going to have to look hard at that and how we're going to cover that time. And right now we have one person who is certified to do stormwater inspections and all those kinds of things that will need to be done. And he's doing a lot of stormwater right now for us. You know, we have contracts with four different towns to help them with stormwater. Caroline, Newfield, Danby, and Ulysses. Yeah. So a lot of his time right now is already taken up with stormwater. And that seems to be increasing every year, how much he has to do.
I was looking at your text again in the budget book, and hydro seeding caught my eye. You have been able to do that free for some municipalities, including the county, I think. With this cut to your budget, that will no longer be the case, or will you still expect to do that?
We haven't done as much this year because we've been kind of short-staffed. We still want to do it. I mean, it's a necessary program that needs to be done.
It was the cost element that I
was talking about. Well, in one of those new grants, that if DEC gets around to allocate those funds, that's what one of those grants is, so that we can continue to buy the materials and stuff and do it for them.
Otherwise, it would be on us to buy it for ourselves.
Somebody, or the individual municipalities. Well,
for the county, I was.
They're for the county,
that's
yeah.
That's what I was wondering.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Jim. Back to the health insurance. Joe, aren't we, the library and TC3 are part of the consortium, right?
Yes, the library's part of the county's plan currently.
Okay. It just seems...
That's what David and I were talking about over here, that there does... That does seem to be a similar relationship between us and the library and us and soil and water. So that, again, we can take a really quick look at this, and maybe there's an opportunity there.
Thank you.
Frank, has your hand up again?
Yeah, one.
And Mike.
Craig, can you say something?
Mike could be the last.
Can you say something about the way that soil and water supports the planning department?
Well, we definitely do the technical work for the flood hazard mitigation program. We do projects jointly with the planning department or the highway department. Whoever we can partner with, we do those projects.
The seeding with the county roads, you're still doing the seeding, right?
Yeah, hydro seeding, those kinds of things.
Hi.
Craig, on the health insurance, do you know how the other counties, how they get their insurance? The SCA,
it varies because they've kind of done a scan of the counties. You know, I sent out emails asking. Some counties are actually on the county system. Other counties are not. They buy their own. It varies.
There are some on the county system.
Right, but okay. I think where the problem came in was with the consortium. I think that's what Greg was looking at, was whether we could be part of the consortium. And he actually brought some language to a board meeting that pretty much stated that we were
ineligible.
Right.
Yeah, but if you're part of the county, then you're part of the consortium.
But may I make a comment? I think Joe and David can check into that.
Yeah.
And we can look into that further, I think. Okay? No more questions. Thank you very much, Craig.
Thank you.
Next is finance. On your desk is a piece of paper, Workforce New York. I believe it's the answer to some questions that came up the other evening. The data participants in a board-funded summer youth program by zip code, and there's 09 and 2010 for your information.
Kim?
Yes?
I'm still trying to find my way in this great book. Where's finance? What page?
Well,
87.
Page 87.
Yeah, how come everybody knows that?
Look on the app.
Because it's on that sheet, Peter. The sheet that shows the dates. And turn around, look right behind you. You can see it.
So I was tempted to put a dollar bill on the cover of finance. I can say this honestly. Finance is the only department in the county that brings in more money than it costs to operate.
You're trying to say something, David?
Though the budget's not constructed that way because most of our efforts are credited to the county as a whole. We are an overhead department, and we operate for the good of the county and not for the good of our self-interest. We are.
Whoa, wait a minute.
As opposed to all the other departments.
This is a two-hour discussion.
So, excuse me, we will put a self-interest quotient on all the other departments.
We think of the county first, not our department. We have operated that way, and that's I believe that is the role of the finance director, to take the county as an entity first, because we have responsibilities for making sure that bills are paid, our employees are paid. So you look at here, our total operation gross cost is a little over $1 million. We've been operating with 11 people for a number of years. There's 6 budgeting units, 4 programs, and 3 main budgets. The 11 employees, 3.5 are in a treasury operation, 6.5 are in accounting, but within accounting, 2 are dedicated to payroll. So we have 4.5 people who do accounting and general financial administration. We have one person is the purchasing function. 11 people. The $1 million here of the operation, 85% of it is people. The rest is approximately a little over $100,000 in contractual services, of which is for the organization, the audit. The audit cost is around total. The county, our department pays for soil and water's audit. We pay for the library's audit, and we pay for most of the county's audit. We charge back a little bit to DSS based upon the cost allocation plan. Of the $1 million, we recover about 30% through revenues that are offset our local share. But the growth in the budget for 2011 is focused on pension cost. Our salary costs, which are over $500,000, are actually below they were the prior year. The only growth in our budget is in contractual services because the audit costs went up, and in the cost for the maintenance of the county software system is tied to a licensing structure that inflates every year. And the pension cost from 2009 to 2011, the pension cost us 26% and budget, an increase in 26%. So here we have the county's target is 700,000. The area that generates the most revenue is Treasury. It recovers about 50% of its cost from services such as tax searches, charges for delinquent taxes that are added, fees for people who are delinquent. But the bulk of the fees for delinquency go to unallocated revenues. The Treasury operation net cost is about $160,000. Treasury generates $750,000 on average in collections of unpaid taxes penalties. And that's why I say the department, just for uncollected taxes, recovers its entire cost. But that $750,000 is reflected in general revenue of the county, not for the department. The county, you know, also the Treasury operation also manages the cash flow of the county. And in good times, it's a significant amount of money of interest earnings. In 2009, we earned about a little under $200,000 in interest. But in 2011, we predict that there'll be less than $100,000 in interest earnings because, on average, right now we're earning 0.4% on our average daily balances, which go from around $25 million down to $10 million by the end of the year. So the target we were given after adjusting for giving us a credit for the increase in the pensions, but we still were short $32,000. And so what this budget says is that we don't have enough money to fund 11 positions. On the sheet before, it said we had in the target there's 10.65 positions. At this point, we're not identifying a position, but the strategy would be if the over-target funding is not approved, that we would cut about 2.5 hours from every employee's schedule to balance out. And so the over-target request is it's really department-wide. The way we constructed our budget, we put it in the accounting division. But at this point, it's something useful to know that while we have 11 positions, two of them are assigned to payroll. Of one of those positions assigned to payroll is funded 50% to assist with the consortium. So we really don't have two positions assigned to payroll because that half position is going to. We expect that it might take at least 50% of that person's time to handle it.
So if we cut that, if we cut 2.5 hours from everybody's job, will that mean that that half time will go to a quarter time?
It would probably mean that somebody's position might be cut more than 2.5 hours. Somebody could go to 35 rather than 37.5 because we couldn't cut the position, the funding from the consortium because they're expected to get their money's worth.
No, I know, but I meant, yeah. So that person that works part-time doing the consortium.
No, it's a full-time position.
I understand.
Yeah.
Half of that job is for the consortium, and half of it is for your department.
Correct.
And my question is that person, if you're cutting 2.5 hours from everybody's job, would you be cutting 2.5 hours from the 4 hours that they work, or however many hours they work for your department, out of that half time? I mean, are you going to cut that?
Probably not. But there could be one person that might go to 35 hours rather than 37.5 to make up for that. Or it could come out of my salary. It's a fluid situation. I am pleased to, you know, that the over-target request is currently recommended, for what that's worth.
I saw a few hands. We'll start over here. I had Peter. Dave, you have your hand up? Peter, and then Martha, and we'll go around this way and come back to Dooley. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I'm afraid it is rocket science. I don't quite get this. I'm sorry. Where's the 7% cut? Who recommended this?
It's the county administrator's budget.
The county administrator's budget recommends that there's no cut, right?
The county administrator's budget recommended funding of the over-target request of $32,000.
So then that explains why in your presentation it went up from 2010 to 2011. So is that...
Well,
what does that mean? I'm confused.
Yeah, in real numbers, the appropriations went up, but at the salaries went down by in this $28,000. Our staffing cost for 2011 is $28,000 less than it was budgeted in 2010. Our pension costs went up $52,000. Our and the rest of basically our contractual went up $6,000. So the $32,000 was really a result of the pension increase.
Well, is this how every department is reporting their salaries? They're putting in the pension costs?
No, it's just that the choice, since our department is 85% people, the only way we can reduce is, the pension has a material effect on how we operate, and so the over-target request has to be in people or time.
Joe, had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you remember, Peter, the exercise we did last week to show how we develop these target budgets and how, even though we've cut expenditures from the maintenance of effort budget, they can still be higher in 2011 than they were in 2010. If you recall, to calculate the target expenditures for 2011, we adjusted every department's budget for those things that they cannot control, specifically in David's case, fringe benefits. So the maintenance of effort budget for David went up significantly in all other departments because of those costs they can't control, fringe benefits. So that was the starting point. To meet our budget targets, we had to reduce that maintenance of effort amount by 6.9%. Okay? So when you do that calculation, I think we showed last week, and I was looking for it on my computer to see if I could bring it back. Do you remember
that? I understand,
that?
But okay. Every department is doing that, so...
Every department, well, that's the way their target amounts of spending were calculated. So
right.
Labor-intensive departments like David take it to the extreme. But there was an adjustment for that fringe factor, and there was a cut from that.
Right.
Now, I was going to spend a little time on the budget document itself in a few minutes, but maybe this, just to take a 1 minute...
If you're going to explain it later, that's fine.
Well, I was just thinking on David's budget, you can go to page 94, and it might be helpful to kind of align these slides with the budget itself. At the bottom of page 94, you see basically his consolidated budget. It's the sum of all the units within finance. Finance is broken up into several units. So you look at the bottom line, that's the local cost. And if you look at that local cost, I believe... If you look in the column called target/base budget, if you go to that column, go all the way to the bottom, you see David's target number was 707,893.
Right.
That compared to his modified budget of the year before of 693. And those are the numbers that you saw on the slide. And that's again, the maintenance of effort budget less the 6.9%. Now, his requested OTR, you see in the next column to the right, the requested OTR of 32,171.
So what he was asking was to bring his roster back to full strength and with the current level of hours. And then in the next series of columns, and that actually the next total request, that's the target budget plus the OTR. It's what he asked for in total, 740.064. In the next column to the right, you can see what we've recommended. We've recommended that you fund that 32,172. It's a dollar off. To get to the total recommended budget of $718,000.
So then, could I just ask why I mean, are we going to hear at some point, Joe, why it is you decided to grant this OTR or not?
And I maybe what I want to do is just make kind of a generic statement at this point, because it probably applies to almost everything that we talk about. My criteria was pretty basic. It was whether the cut would affect directly the health and safety of individuals within the community. That was really the acid test. The third part of that test was, does it affect core governance? Are we going to be able to maintain the function of government if that cut is made? And I put finance into that basket. And you're going to hear from a couple others tonight. You're going to hear from the county attorney. And I made a similar judgment there, that if the cut is not restored, we aren't able to conduct the core function of governance. So it's health, safety, and core governance. And I tried to stick to that. And you'll see variations as we go along. But that was really the acid test.
Okay, thank you very much.
Martha.
To follow that up, so... there's so many different percentages. The fringe rate went up from 11.5 to 16.3 or something, right? So, but
yes,
the retirement rate
went retirement
from,
did
11%
to 16%.
Fringes
went
up
from 40.5 to 50.4.
40.5 to 50.5.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand. If I'm looking at the 2010 modified, a maintenance of effort, because the denominators are all not the same, so the maintenance of effort would have been 740, is that right, in this case?
If essentially, yes. That restored 100% funding for all the positions at... And all the positions we have in there are actually are funded at a level. I mean, the salaries are actually slightly less than they were in 2010.
Why is that?
Because there was a reclass downward.
Okay. All right. I guess as I'm trying to figure, because I'm looking for a way sort of easily to understand what the real cut is, and when something goes up 2%, it's hard to get that it's a cut. So maybe this is for next year's budget book. If there's a column in there that says between 2010 modified and target base for 2011, maybe there's a column that says maintenance of effort.
That would make it a lot clearer, right?
You know what I mean? So we'd know kind of what the apples to apples comparison would be. So to try to give us a general benchmark on let's say a department that's mostly personnel, if you're trying to do maintenance of effort, you would expect the budget to go up what percent? 10%, because that's the fringe rate increase 10%. Is that right?
Yeah, that's about right.
So any budget that shows less than a 10% increase is actually a cut, even if it's a raw increase. Okay, 10%, 10%. Okay, thank you.
Who's next over here? I've lost my mind. Go ahead, Brian.
Just a quick question. I guess it's one that might be reoccurring or whatever, but... This is the second presentation today where they've rectified their budget by FTEs. And my question is, Are there some, like what came to mind was, you know, we're going to be hearing from Lee pretty soon where, you know, he's got a 24-hour operation, which I assume are all 8-hour blocks, so that's not really possible. But are there collective bargaining agreements where the work week is in there, where that's not possible in certain departments?
In some, but in finance is unique because the employees are not in bargaining unit. They're confidential employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have, the standard work week can be adjusted without bargaining consequences.
Okay, but we are going to run across.
But you would run across that in the bargain in the traditional contracts because they have
standard work weeks and I mean they're already in there.
Yeah.
Yet you'd have to negotiate that with the unions to get a reduction in the standard work week.
Well, they might contend that you can't. The budget to me is rules rather than. You know, if you don't have the money to pay for a whole 40-hour week, what are you going to do?
Well, let's not get into that.
I think, Brian, we can assert management rights. I think there are some management rights within contract to affect work week. And I think there are certain standard work weeks that are set forth in 35 hours, 37 and a half hours, and 40 hours. There is, I believe, some latitude there. You'd have to go contract by contract to understand the extent of that latitude, but there's some. Road Patrol, for example, I don't know that there's any. I don't think we can do anything there. Mm-hmm. But in some of the other contracts, I do believe there's some management latitude to make changes.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Will, can you end up? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Carol.
Yeah. Rather than just come to Peter and answer some of his questions, I was going to say, because there are three new people, and each of you have to keep leaving the room, as the rest of us do, I wanted to point out some other places in the budget, and for the public watching, some other places where you can see in the budget what the administrator is recommending and what the OTRs are. The pages that are the summary of the OTRs, which could be separated from the book, give that information. Then there's the main book and the lines that are repeated that Joe pointed out. And then there are gray pages under the summary, OTR and rollover summary section, where you can see at a glance which of the OTRs the administrator is recommending. And, I just think it can be useful to know that that exists as we go
through
the budget.
Thank you. I'm hoping they do. Go ahead.
David, I'm so impressed with your lead-in statement that you make money for the county. And Joe couldn't combat that one, right? The very first page has dog control, dog damage claims. A couple of questions associated with that. Are those the ones at Ag and Markets? We have to pay because somebody's sheep get attacked by a dog, and is that paid out of contingency?
No, what happens? This convoluted process of dog licensing. The towns collect dog licenses, submit part of the dog license to the county, then the county submits part of the dog license to the Ag and Market. But there is a certain portion the county retains the dog licenses because, as part of the constitutional responsibility of the chief fiscal officer of the county is to adjudicate, prosecute. Dog damage. So if you have a harbor of a delinquent dog that damages somebody's property, you have the right to come and get an assessment of the damage. And if you don't know who the harborer of the dog is, then you can put the claim in and it's paid out of this fund. So what happens every year is the expenses are then taken out, and then we distribute back to the towns the unused portion. So the state's taken over assigning the program back to the towns, so that's why it's not even in the budget for next year, because we're not going to get the dog licenses.
We're not getting our share of the dog license fee. Okay, thank you.
So two things have been taken away from my kingdom, dog damages and septic.
And you're so sad about that. Yes.
What was the second one?
Septic. I used to be the septic czar of the county.
The septic czar. With that, we'll end. Thank you very much, David. One more comment.
It didn't come all the way around. I'm sorry. On page 86, under utilities, taxes, insurance, taxes are down, and I just wondered why. It's a small number, but I'm curious.
That's facilities.
I'm looking at the wrong page. I beg your pardon. Forget what I just said. I'll
try very hard.
Then the last thing I wanted to say was, last year I made a big pitch for how this department is understaffed. Purchasing, as David said, is one person. One person is insufficient to do the complete job of purchasing. The idea of cutting this department anymore is just so foolish in my view.
You will have your chance to say that exactly the same way about 3 weeks from now.
Don't you agree? That's my question.
Absolutely. Yeah. Of course.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you, David. Very much for the work you do in bringing money into the county, and you're through. No more questions for David. We have... County Attorney, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but it's almost 10 after 6, and he was scheduled for 5:30, so I don't think it needs any more comment. Go ahead, John.
Are you moving this along?
Moving right along.
Okay, moving on here to the first slide. The important thing about this is that 97.6% of our budget is personnel, and I know that's right because Kevin did the math, not me, which actually is the answer to Martha's question, because it's as close to 100% as you're going to get. And so what it would be if you had the exact same budget and it was all personnel would be a 4% increase is what you see right there. All of that, 100% of that is the fringe. That's what accounts for that increase. So moving to the next slide, the difference between this slide and that slide is actually this counts in new revenue. And we have some new revenue for 2011, which knocks it down to 1%. The new revenue is that solid waste is going to give us $10,000 more so we can maintain the services to them, which obviously, as you know, comes out of the solid waste fee and not the tax. And also, Joe has allocated $2,500 from the room tax and tourism to us. As many of you probably know, in collecting the room tax, the county has always kept a percentage fee for its work, and the county attorney's office has actually always done a lot of that work, but none of the fee was ever really assigned to us. It was assigned to departments that were not doing the work, or certainly not to us. So Joe decided to allocate $2,500 of it, but it reflects works that has been done for a long time. So that really very much narrows our and any kind of budget gap we have, the additional revenues. So then turning to, I thought it was probably best to just do the list of the three OTRs and just go through them. And it's probably best if I start with the third one and work backwards, kind of. The legislative code review is the county code, which is both online, on the internet, and hard copy and it's accessible to the public, and that fee is simply the fee that we pay. That $4,000 is, it varies depending on how many local laws, et cetera, we adopt, but that's just the amount that we pay to the company which does it. And Greg determined that it was way, way cheaper to have the company do it than for us to do it in-house by a magnitude of over 10. And Joe has recommended that for one-time funding, not, I think, because of whether we wanted to fund it or not in the future, but the question of whose budget it should be in. So for next year, it would be in the county attorney's budget, and it may be in future years, but that's basically to continue to publish the county code both online and offline. Number two is membership dues. That's in the that's in the County Attorneys Association. We did not fund that last year, and actually the New York State County Attorney Association treasurer called me and said we were the only county which made that decision. And the truth is, like, it only costs $600 a year, and you get together several times with other county attorneys, and you always learn something which saves you more than $600 a year. So it's just not really a wise cut, or it's a cut which I don't think really ends up saving any money. The real issue, I think, is, of course, staff hours, because, as I said, we're 97% staff. I created, with Kevin's help, a chart which is kind of different than anything you've seen. You know, like Joe had mentioned before, he recommended that this be financed because it is a core function of county government. But I put it in a chart, a way I look at it. And like I think I've pointed out before in the past, the county attorney's office, we don't control how many lawsuits we have or grievances or disciplines. Like, that's out of our control. And what we try to do is handle all those things in the most efficient way possible. And we are now as busy as we can be. If we had less staff, we'd simply have to hire them out because those things aren't going away. And so I tried to put into numbers what would be the difference between us continuing to do that, if it was not to be restored, what would be the actual cost. So I went through the cost in terms of the reduction of hours. Kevin actually did it, so I know it's right. What would be the actual savings? Because the numbers that you have in the budget books don't really necessarily represent the actual savings to taxpayers. You have to really figure out what that is. Because, for example, if you were to cut one of our salaries, it reflects all the fringe too. But, for example, my health care is my health care. And it isn't going down if you cut my hours by five. So it's a cut on the books, but it's not a real cut. So you really want to look at what I tried to do is, what is the real cost? What do you really save by doing it? And if you did that line, what you'd actually save is $8,966, which is about $9,000. But the cost for someone else to do it, which we'd need to do, would be $49,198. So for every dollar you spend or do not cut, you save $5.49. And I really think that probably understates it, because it would take other people, given more time than it takes us, really, because of so much background you have to do. But aside from the fact that being a fundamental government function, that it really is more costly for us not to do it than to do it. And it's actually I was thinking while we were doing this, is sometimes maybe an interesting way to look at some other budgets too, like whether the cut is, you know, to break it down, is what is the actual savings to taxpayers, and then what is the actual cost to replace those services. I think in some cases, as I think is kind of reflected in Joe's budget, it'll be the opposite. It'll be cheaper to cut the service and let it be done elsewhere. But in this case, and mostly because lawyers are expensive,
And the marginal cost of us, once you've paid for our offices and you've paid for our basic fringes like our health care, the marginal cost of our additional hours is very cheap. It's very little, whereas going out and hiring to do it is very high. So, you know, in a sense, it's you know, restoring that does make sense. And that's pretty much all I have. You know, obviously, we have to answer any questions.
We'll start over here. Peter, you had to hand up. Then we'll go to Dooley, and then to Mike, and then to Martha.
Okay. Jonathan, that factor of five, I find that woke me up. The factor of five between inside and outside. And I'm just wondering where that comes from. You get a certain amount per hour, and the attorney that you hire gets a certain amount per hour. Is that different by a factor of five?
Yes, it is. And, in fact, if you look at the numbers over there on the left column, those are our rates by the hour. Now, that's not the total budget if you divided it by our hours. That's the marginal amount. Right, for an additional hour, because basically what you're paying for an additional hour is the salary. You know, the office is already there, the, you know, healthcare and stuff are already there. So, yes, if you're paying for me, for example, for another hour, I'd cost you $55. Right. But if you were to go out and get an attorney, and, you know, it would be
two, like 200.
It'd be like 200. Well, I use 200, but it would really be much more than that. And it would be, you know, so when you take overall our cost, it would be about a factor of five.
Okay. And you're both as efficient. I mean, you can
I think we're more, not because we're geniuses or anything, but, you know, I've been doing it for 17 years. Steve has been doing it for 10 years. Susie's been there 25 years. Aaron's been there 12 years or something. So you develop a certain efficiency, so I think we're more efficient than if you were to go out and hire someone. Not that we're, you know.
Okay.
Dooley.
Thank you. This is not a question to Jonathan so much as to Joe. When you put $600 membership in as Target, and I understand why. They should belong every year. You put $4,000 code review in as one time, even though I think that will be a continuing expense. And I'm not sure why you did that, and maybe it's just because it's easier to do it that way for this year, but that's part of this list that I hope we will get that shows all these one time that will act that are actually going to be continuing costs. And I wanted to, if I hadn't already asked for that, I wanted to ask that now, that we will get a list of all those.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's been asked for, but we can certainly provide it. We have that. That one comes as close, I think, as we got to using one-time money to fund what is probably a recurring cost.
Yeah.
So I would admit that's the case. In part, it's because it's a pretty volatile expense. It can go way up and way down over the course of the years. So in part it reflects that volatility, the uncertainty about what it's going to be over the long term. But again, I think if your point is this is probably a recurring expense that you're funding with a little bit of one-time money, I would agree that that's the case.
Depends how many laws we pass.
I think you're going to find it's one of the very few cases where we have done that. Generally, we've stuck to the one-time expense covered by one-time revenue rule.
Mike.
Well, Dooley raised my issue about that, that it's going to be recurring. And it doesn't matter what budget it's in. And it might as well be in the attorney's budget, mm-hmm. because that's where it always used to be, except this year when it was left out and we had to do a contingent request for it.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not objecting to that. It was just the issue of I thought we were, you know, we were discussing what budget would be in. I think that might have been part of the motivation.
Mark.
Thank you. If you could go back to the second slide, where the one with local dollars.
Right.
Or maybe the one before that. I'm sorry. Where you said that one. That's good. So this is the example of it's almost 100%.
Right. And as you said, it would be, when you asked before and Joe said it would be about 10%, that would be the 4% plus the 6% cut. So I think that number that he that you came up with is right. Because if you, I mean, if it's, there's, you know, you stayed exactly the same and just had the increase in the fringe rate, that's where you'd be.
I don't.
Well, I mean, exactly the same, including the 6% reduction, right? You take the 6% reduction, you add back the fringe rate increase, and that's where you are.
4%. The fringe rate increase was 10.9%.
Okay.
Right.
And if you have a department that's 100% personnel, they're going to see a 10.9% increase in their target. And then you take 6.9% off, there's...
Oh, got
yeah,
it.
So it's going to leave you with a 4%.
This is the closest one I think you'll find at 97.6, and that's rounded up to 4. It's actually 3 point something. But this would be a case where almost as close as you can to almost a what exactly happens, every department would see at least a three point change percent increase from 2010 to 2011.
And that's actually a 6% cut.
That's actually a 6% cut. 6.9%
cut,
yes.
4% increase is actually 6.9% cut. You hear that, Liz? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Anyone else down the side of the room? Carol?
Yeah, I'm not understanding what counties do that don't have the resources that we do. If for counties that don't have our budget, don't have our property base, tax base, can't afford, whether it's the attorney or finance department or the amount of staff that we do, what would happen if we
who are you asking?
I think I'm asking, I don't know. What would happen in counties? How do we compare to other counties that
I think our staff is actually really small compared to other comparable counties. But many counties actually farm out a lot of the stuff we do. And, you know, it's more costly that way overall. I mean, if you can maintain a staff that can do it, it's more costly. In fact, there was this article recently in the Miller case where Miller is suing the city and the county, and the city is paying outside counsel, and we're doing it in-house, and it said they had already spent, I don't know, $30,000-$40,000 on that case already, which, by the way, we got a decision in today, and they threw us out. So, and they threw us out, so the county is out.
We're not a part of it.
Yeah, we're not part of it as of this afternoon.
Breaking news.
But, I mean, that's an example. Most other places hire someone, and it costs more money.
And in some counties, each political party has its own legal staff.
Right. God knows.
It's crazy.
Thank you for not doing that here. Go ahead, Brian.
Kevin, could you flip back to... The last slide that you had, which, that one. And in this case, yes, Jonathan, obviously it's cheaper to do in-house. There's going to come a time, I think, where we have to look for things like this with the fringe costs attached to it and some sort of study showing outside costs. It's tough for department heads to do because it's going to be. Do you know what I'm saying, Kevin? I see you shaking your head yes, but
yeah, we might be biased.
Right. Well, in your case, yeah, obviously, attorney, the hourly fees for attorneys are very expensive.
Right.
But there may be some services currently being done by the county that could be done cheaper outside. Especially when you have fringe costs at 50 or 60 that keep going up and up. So this sort of thing may have to be done again in the future, but in the opposite, as an argument against instead of for.
Any other questions, comments? Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Kevin.
Lee, emergency response.
What?
Lee is not.
It's a nice color. There you go.
Can't afford new.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I was told when I learned public speaking that the most dangerous place to be was right ahead of serving of somebody's dinner. I know I'm right ahead of your break, so I'll try to facilitate that and keep it moving. The first slide that you see, I won't dwell on this very long, just to kind of give you an overview. And I feel like I'm going back to some agrarian roots because I'm going to replow some ground that David and Jonathan and others have been through. But this reflects the total expenditures or requested appropriations that would keep us within target. And I would point out that, again, that we're a labor-heavy department as well, similar to the others. And of the $2.9 million plus, over $2,030,000 plus is just for the employee salaries and fringe benefits. If we go to the next slide, I can elaborate just a little bit more on how this gets reduced. We have revenues to the department that are budgeted in the neighborhood of $963,000. Those include surcharges and reimbursements related to the 911 program and some smaller amounts that we are able to receive through the State Emergency Management Office and the State Health Department that reimburses for coordination programs. And those offset some of the operational salaries in the department. Of these appropriations, as I said, over $2 million, more than the target, it goes to fringe benefits and employee salaries. The other major expenses to the Department of Emergency Response are roughly $900,000 in contractual expenses that support the radio system, telephone systems, and the telephone and building expenses for the transmitter sites. Those, in turn, are offset by the revenues that come through the 911 and other surcharges. And it's important to note that of those surcharges and reimbursements, very little of those are allowed by state law to be applied toward salaries. So essentially, what revenues we have offset the operational expenses, everything outside of salaries and fringe benefits. I have no flexibility to use those revenues toward offsetting the salaries and fringes. Therefore, the target budget is essentially salaries and fringe benefits for those people that work in our department. I'll note here as well that we are probably one of the most equipment-intense departments that you have when you take into account the radio and telephone communication systems, the amount of technology that's been invested through our capital programs. My equipment line for I don't know how many years running now remains at zero. What equipment the department has been able to obtain and maintain over the last few years has come by way of the capital programs as well as any grant monies that we've been able to access. And I had a resolution before the board last night accepting a state grant that will allow us to contribute toward the CAD system. That's how we're able to acquire and stay current with equipment. And it gets tighter and tighter every year. And I'm back to the same issue that one more time we'll do what we can to meet the target budget, but at some point, looking in the long term, we've got to be able to identify some revenue sources or start to adjust the budget to be able to account for future equipment replacement. If we move to the next slide, the over-target request that we have put in for the budget this year is $107,000 to maintain effort to maintain staffing levels at what we have. Some of you will remember that last year we reduced one position in the office. We eliminated the position of a telecommunications technician. We also underfunded one dispatch position by 50%, knowing that we had a historical trend in the office of there being recurring vacancies that allowed us to underfund one position. We do that also with the knowledge that when there are vacancies and there is an overturn that happens among the 21 dispatch positions, that for periods of time we are relying on overtime that is built into the budget to fill that and keep us at a minimal staffing level. All these factors into account, in order to meet the target reduction or the target goal, required me to, the target reduction amounted to about $150,000. We've squeezed another $43,000 out of contractual lines by reducing costs related to the phone system, also by placing equipment on a time and material basis, and by canceling contracts that had funded equipment that will no longer be used because of the new CAD system. That got me to about a third of where I needed to be. The only place I've got to go for meeting target is to salaries and fringe benefits, and thus a request in order to maintain staffing levels, the request is for $107,000. This could be accomplished if need be through not refilling a dispatch position when one, if and when one becomes vacant, or having to perform a layoff, or going back and decreasing some staff times. What this reflects is further is eliminating one position in dispatch and further reducing what's funded in a second position. It's essentially the same request that you saw last year. No change in equipment, reduction further in contractual and maintenance costs, and looking to the personnel lines to meet the target. And that that's reflected as well on the last slide where we would be looking to. This is, as I've noted before, it's a dangerous area based on the volumes that we're seeing in the dispatch operations and in emergency services in general. I've noted before in some of the discussions and presentations I've had where the number of fire and EMS calls over the past 5 years, the number dispatched have risen by 25%. The number of law enforcement calls that we're dispatching annually are increasing almost regularly on a 3% basis. The number of telephone calls to the 911 system in 5 years' time have gone, and this is due to the proliferation of wireless devices that are out there primarily, has gone from 33,000 to over 61,000. We're maintaining, we're able to handle this volume of calls and have done so with the same number of dispatchers, but there comes a point where the number of people are not going to be there to handle as well, at least, the amount of volume that is continually increasing through public safety response. And I'm concerned year in and year out with watching this increase occur, watching the demands and the expectations continue to increase, but no increase in the number of people that have got to handle it. And it's putting a lot of pressure on the organization, but we do our best to meet the target. And again, the only place that we have to go is to the personnel lines. The county administrator has recommended the funding of this target. I appreciate that. And one thing that I will note is that we do continue to look for other revenue streams to support the organization. I thought maybe 2 or 3 years ago I'd be in David's position to be able to point out where we've got outside revenue coming in to offset a number of our expenses. And in fact, we did that last year by raising the surcharge to $1. That has helped fill this gap over the past year and in continuing years. We had some expectation 4 or 5 years ago, and we signed the contracts on the communication system, that we would see a contribution from the state of New York. The statewide wireless would share in our facilities. I still have some belief that at some point in time that some semblance of that program will materialize. We also felt that there would be income produced from the infrastructure that cell companies and wireless providers would seek to locate on our sites. Today I've talked with three companies that have some interest, but yet because of the lack of working capital that the companies have and the consolidations that are taking place in the wireless industry, that has not materialized. I still think that eventually we will see other counties that will want to take advantage or partner with us on our systems. I still think the state will at some point be contributing and using our system, and I still think that we will see other users in better economic times wish to use those sites, but those revenues are just not here at this point, and so we're essentially with a maintenance effort request before you.
Are we ready for questions, Lee?
Sure.
Okay, we'll start with Peter, and Martha, you had your hand up. We'll go Peter, Martha, around the table.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions.
Use the microphone, please.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions, Lee. Number one, this constant increase in the number of calls, that's two possibilities. One is that there the number of incidents is increasing, and the other is that the multiplicity of the calls about each incident is increasing. And it seems to me they're very different, because after you've gotten the third call about the bad-looking guy on the corner, you don't necessarily have to string, you know, keep talking to the fourth, fifth, and sixth people that call in about it, I imagine.
You still have to answer the phone
and
get
the
basic information, and that's part of the stress is that...
I can't believe it takes nearly as much time to tell a person that we're on that. Thanks for calling.
It doesn't, but it requires everybody in there in order to be able to answer that phone, which we're able to do. The other thing is if you've got a crime in progress, these days you keep people on the line to continue to get additional information and to follow the situation and be able to provide information to the units that are responding. The other part to it is that it may not be 3, 4, or 5 calls. It may be 25 or 30 calls, depending on where the accident occurs. So you're using everybody you've got just to be able to answer the phones and process the information. And there is the continual increase in the volume of calls, not as dramatic as the phone calls themselves, but the number of incidences do continue to increase on a yearly basis.
Right, but you can't dismiss the whole thing. I mean, I can't believe that the number of responders you need in the office is directly proportional to the number of calls that come in.
I wouldn't say it's proportional, but I wouldn't want any less bodies in the center than what we have now to be able to handle that volume when it comes in.
Okay. Second question, there's a couple of projects that I've heard about, and I wondered what the impact of them is on the needs of your office and whether the finances required to support them come through your office or not. And that's the computer, the new system for the CAD system. And the second was this business about getting out of the business of maintaining the alarms. There's costs and revenues that flow in both of those changes, and I wonder what effect. I mean, who's going to pay for these things? Is it your office? Are they figured into your budget? Are you going to have some relief of the people that when we no longer service those fire alarms? Does that mean that you have excess people? So I'd like you to comment on both.
Yeah, that's like 11 questions. So.
Well, I think I can
summarize.
Try to summarize, yeah.
You want me to summarize or you'll summarize?
I'll summarize.
Okay.
There's really two points there. One has to do with the new technology that's being implemented, and it is being funded through the capital program substantially and some additional grant monies.
and there will be a maintenance cost that comes with it. That's offset by what we were previously spending for similar systems. So there's not an increase that we'll be looking for in future budgets. That's been accounted for in how we've structured the capital project. The second has to do with the alarm systems that we propose. And that really strikes to the heart of what we're trying to do by not adding personnel, but trying to streamline the operations. And what the problem that we're into with the alarm systems is that we've dealt with it in a passive manner. We've always received alarms by those that have directed, specifically fire alarms. If we were to continue to stay in that, we're really under the requirement or the need to comply with national standards, National Fire Protection Association standards for supervision and monitoring of alarm systems. We don't do that. Code enforcement has gotten to a point where they're demanding that be done either by us or by private monitoring services. For us to comply and to actually provide something more than just receiving a fire alarm and dispatching it, to actually monitor and supervise those alarms and track all of the changes for the several hundred accounts that are directed into us would require that we would have additional personnel and an additional personnel cost. Therefore, I've recommended that we turn that monitoring over, that it be shifted to private services. And many of the accounts in the community do go to private services today, and that we just strictly receive the alarm as it is given to us.
Okay, but through whose budget will, I mean, we're going to have to pay those people for the job they're doing.
No, it would become a cost that would be borne by the private entity that is having their alarm service monitored.
And the savings come in the codes department then, is that correct?
No, it's a cost that now will have to be incurred by those that are having their buildings monitored.
I understand, but at currently we're doing it for nothing, right? So
we'll
stop doing it.
We're not.
I wonder where that savings will.
No, that's the issue. We're not doing what needs to be done. We're just strictly isolating the fire alarms that come in and dispatching them. We're not actively monitoring and actually providing the service that the codes require be done. And for us to do that, for us to stay in and be compliant, would require additional personnel to actually be in the supervising and monitoring business that we're not performing today. That would translate into us a cost of another $100,000 a year for the additional personnel that's estimated. We had looked, our department had looked at implementing some type of fee to do the monitoring, but what fee to compete and be in the same range that the private monitoring companies charge
today. I'm sorry, I wasn't really asking. It's not the appropriate place to discuss this, but
I was just
wondering about the flow of
money. We couldn't find the revenues. We couldn't get revenues that would offset the additional cost to be fully compliant. And therefore, we've recommended that business be transitioned out. We'll still be dispatching the alarms, but they'll be coming in through an alarm company.
Martha.
Thank you. I've been looking in the basic book, and I don't see any line for overtime.
It would be in the personnel, individual lines within personnel when we break them down in the line item budget. And the OT, you'll see some of these lines are have an abbreviation, OT, EMERG, services. So
okay.
On. Do you have access to that?
I'm looking. Well,
if you look down, for instance, the OT doesn't reflect on the pages that you're seeing,
okay.
But you'll see a number 16,000 and 14,000 and 23,000 that are about two-thirds of the way down. Those are overtime numbers.
They're 512 accounts, 512000. So you find,
okay.
510 is staff or is FTE, and then 512
okay.
is the overtime.
So for each I see you've got emergency services dispatch in a 510 line, and then down the same title, 512. Okay.
Right. The full-time salaries reflect within the 510, and the 512 reflects the additional money budgeted for overtime, and the 513 would be the shift premium that gets added, depending on where the full-time people are assigned.
Okay. And maybe then what I'm asking isn't here. So could we get a report from you? Would it be difficult to get, say, the last couple, 3 years of sort of overtime costs altogether and show us what the trends are? And then the other question about that is, Jonathan pointed out that if he's half-time or three-quarters or full-time, we're still paying one unit of health insurance as fringe. If somebody's working overtime, we're not paying any more health insurance fringe, but are we paying additional pension and any other benefits on overtime?
Yes. You're paying based upon reported salaries. Pension is based upon reported salaries, and overtime is a factor in there.
Okay. So for that increment, the fringe is still up. They're still there. Okay.
You'll see in the 2008 and 2009 actual that the overtime is trending higher than what we're budgeting each year, but that's offset by the vacancies that may be open periodically in the full-time equivalency line.
Okay.
So we're managing all of personnel within the budget lines every year, but it's a chore, and it's a movement of overtime versus not filling for a period versus spreading people out. Okay. We really look to the bottom line when we're done to fund the personnel.
Thank you very much.
I have Frank, Carol, Mike, and Will.
Thanks, Jim. Lee, just using page 79 in the large book, the 3410 unit as an example. Under revenue, there was a line for local government contribution, and a little further down it was state aid. There was another line for state aid. Is that local government contribution, was that the payment that we had been receiving for the dispatch when we consolidated the dispatch?
No, those would reflect grants that came in from the state or federal government, and the budget was adjusted. They weren't budgeted monies. These are actual numbers for 2008 and 9, and they would have reflected probably some Homeland Security monies that come in. The payment that you're referring to is the sales tax, and that's in 41110, the $147,000 and $180,000 numbers that continue to be paid.
Are there any state monies that you're going to be able to access as revenue for any particular one of the four programs? excuse me.
There are two state accounts that where we see some reimbursement. One is through the health department that amounts to around $30,000, and that's threatened every year with the governor's budget. It's part of some of the local aid costs that get proposed for being cut and then get restored. The governor left it alone this year under EMS. The second has to do with 911 funding that we have access to, that at one point was $55,000, then was reduced to $52,000, then was reduced to $45,000. And again, that requires legislative reappropriation every year. The only hope that I have is that with the reorganization of the State Homeland Security and Emergency Services Office and the creation of the interoperable communications, that they will increase that reimbursement and potentially, with a reorganized office, seek to implement some type of a statewide radio system utilizing and renting or reimbursing us for some of our systems. But that's a new division that still lacks a director and frankly, till after the election, will lack direction. But there is some funding that has been set up in the tens of millions of dollars, conceivably, to do that. And we're also looking at some broadband potentials as well that might have some federal monies that, that follow that.
Thanks. Carol.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on this business of the security alarms, and I thank you for the information that you provided on that after our earlier discussions. I understand the answer to Peter about that we it would cost us more to step up to the new standards. We're currently monitoring 600-plus security alarm systems at the old level of service that presumably requires an amount of staff time and effort to determine what's a mouse in the system and what really needs dispatching. Where's the savings in the budget from cutting off the service that we're currently providing?
There are no savings by cutting it off. The savings are in not having to comply with the state and federal requirements, the state and federal standards to actively monitor those alarms. If we remain in that business, we have to perform many more functions and dedicate staff to following those alarm systems by every action that is tied to it. System failures, trouble alarms, testing, numerous things. Right now, we just passively receive a fire alarm. If an alarm comes in from an installation, we take that, we dispatch it. If we get a trouble alarm or if something comes in for a generator running, or something that's non-fire, something that does not tell us there's a fire alarm going off, it's not managed or supervised. That's the key to it. You have to actively monitor these accounts if you're going to be in the business. And one thing I need to clarify is that we do not handle security alarms, burglary, robbery, those types of things. Never have. It's strictly firearms. The 600 number that you mentioned includes a city box alarm system, which is roughly 150. Those are being moved at the direction of the city off from their box alarm system and have been sent to private alarm companies because the city does not recognize us as being a true monitoring service. The balance, the 400 or so that are left, are a variety of places, including county facilities, that we have accounts for, but we can't verify if they do, in fact, all come to us. And those include a number of private installations. Many of these people these companies or places that send us fire alarms are already paying for security services at other places, and it may be simply just redirecting those alarms, and there may be no additional charge, but it all depends on what their particular circumstance is.
I'm still not quite understanding. If there are 400-some-odd who are going to have to go, who aren't currently doing it, so there are those we've already told we can't take on any new ones. There are 400-some-odd that we're going to be telling you've got to go and subscribe to a service that we'd have estimates anywhere from years of $25 a month per building to mine that I've heard of $68 a month per building for agencies, some of which, and private entities, some of which have multiple buildings. That's paying for something that we're currently doing. So I guess I'm not understanding why there wouldn't then be a savings that would show up in our budget.
Joe, can I try? We're not doing it. Right now, if that alarm comes in, we respond to it. The alarm registers on the dispatch console, and we respond to it. That's what we do, and that's what we will do in the future when alarms come to us via a private operator. It's what we're not doing right now that we will have to do if we continue this service. It's an avoided cost. So in terms of looking for savings, there won't be. When that alarm comes in, we will still have a dispatcher there who will respond to that and dispatch the appropriate response to it. So that cost is a constant. It's the avoided cost that we're dealing with here. And it's a six-figure number that we're trying to avoid.
So at the moment, we're not checking in. Sorry.
Yeah. I have two other people. I have Mike and Will, and then I'll get to you, Dave, and you, Peter, if you want to.
Lee, on the overtime issue, one of the things I know statewide has been looked at is the issue of manipulation of overtime. Could you explain how your overtime in your department is assigned so we don't have issues like that?
Sure. There is a rotating list, and it gets established based on seniority. And every dispatcher, when an overtime situation occurs, you follow down through the list and ask anybody in order of the seniority, and then it just rotates back through the list if they want to take that time. We've gotten to a point, just for instance, that there have been so many overtime situations created in the last couple of years with number of disabilities that we've had, that we've had to do mandatory overtime and force people to take it. We have not really had a trend where any large amounts are going to anybody nearing retirement, for instance. In fact, there's very few people that are in that approaching retirement category or age. There is a rotation and there's a balancing to it. And
is the rotation by seniority, is that required by a union contract, or is that just
that's what, just how you set the list up, rather than alphabetical. It gets offered starting in that order, but once you start through the rotation, you just keep circling through again. So
the next time up, it might be someone that has less seniority might be first asked.
Right.
Thank you.
I will.
Leah, I apologize for coming back once again to this alarm system. I saw you here last night,
sure.
And I was hoping we could ask you about it then, but you snuck out before we could get to you. Why are our economics completely worse in terms of providing the service or upgrading to the service than a private outside company? Why is it just simply not feasible to do that service?
Well, I think a couple of things that would go into it. To do the active monitoring, especially with the daytime volumes and the number of installations and tests and so on that occur, you would need another person during the week, Monday through Friday, when the alarm companies are doing the work and performing these chores. To reasonably manage that. The second would be you probably would need another half-time person on staff to handle the accounts and keep the information current and to periodically go through and verify the information. And again, as I say, right now this is a passive process. Somebody calls, sets up an account, it gets put in there. We don't go back and follow through much with it until an alarm comes in. And where I was talking the economics on it were that if you were to establish a fee to offset increased costs, and you're looking at maybe 400 accounts at an average of $20 a month, it wouldn't offset that additional staffing. You really need to be a much higher volume.
Economy of scale, we're just not there.
That's correct. Okay. And there are probably, outside of the few hundred that we do, there are probably 2,000 or 3,000 alarms in the county that already go to private companies. We constantly get them. The Topses and the Wegmans and so on, they all contract with outside the banks and so on.
Gotcha. Second, and this is not a budgetary question so much, but it connects, which is there any mechanized approach to the problem we were talking about earlier of multiple calls about the same incident? Is there some way to stack that, or that's less labor intensive? That
when I would tell you that a few years ago, when 90%+ of our calls came in by landline phone, and every one that popped up had an address that came with it, you could spot it pretty good. But now that 75% to 80% of our calls come in by wireless calls, we're back to the old days where some of the technology that's there will start mapping that for us, but in most instances you have to go through every cell call to ask them where they are and have them give a description. Okay. And that's a complicating factor, because you got lots of people that are on Route 38 and you spend time saying, are you on the section that's in Preville, Dryden, Groton? Are you on the Groton Road, Preville Road, Prue Road, Harford, Dryden
say,
Road?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm somewhere on 38 between Dryden and Groton. Well, that covers a lot of territory. So you spend a lot of time asking those questions. Or if it's an accident here on Route 13 and we're down to saying, are you in the northbound or southbound lane? Because you don't ask them if they're on Fulton Street or Meadow Street. A lot of callers don't know. I'm on Route 13. So the amount of time it takes to process a wireless call versus what we used to have when everybody relied, they went to a payphone and picked it up or dialed from a landline just a few years ago, that information isn't there. And we used to know that if the phone would ring and the calls are all on East Cortland Street in Groton, well, you pretty much knew that we've got it. You have to stop and process that now.
Thank you.
Dave.
I'm going to pass because Will already asked the question that I was going to ask.
Thank you, Dave. I'm grateful. Peter.
You owe me.
I do.
I'm sorry it's taking me so long to understand this, but could you please tell me whether what I'm
you
saying
is true or not? You want to use the
microphone? My understanding now is that we do not do anything except passively receive a call. Receive a signal. But if that box is broken, we don't do anything about it. Is that correct?
We're not monitoring closely enough to know that if it's broken or not.
We do no monitoring to see whether it's broken or not.
Not much, no. You might find something irregular and an alarm that comes in that would cause you to call the installation to see if there's a problem or the alarm company, but rarely does that happen. Daily tests are a good example. Under the requirements, there's supposed to be a daily testing of alarms, and if a monitoring service realizes that a daily test hasn't come in from one of those 600 accounts, you would track it in some manner and then attempt to call the alarm company and then the installation and tell them, we didn't get a test. Can you tell us if you're online, offline? We don't do that.
Answer to the question? At the moment, we do not test whether an alarm system works or not. Yes or no?
No.
Okay,
the answer
Thank
is no.
You. Okay.
There are exceptions, but actively, no.
I think we're done with this. Thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a break scheduled. We'll break till 10 after, and then I apologize to the two gentlemen in the back of the room, but we'll get to you starting at that time in the order of highway and facilities. And.